Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am profoundly, deeply moved that you chose to be with me on this 20th day of July 2019. We're going to look at why are there spiritual masters? I got some interesting questions in the last 4 months about it. I don't know what the fever is out there. I'm probably not too much in touch with all that, but I gathered these questions together and I thought they would make a wonderful program, and maybe it will serve you well. I don't know. We'll hope so. I want to remind you that these radio programs, as you well know, are supported solely and entirely upon your tax-deductible gift. It is your contributions that make all this possible, and I hope that you will become a sponsor if you're not already. It would be of great service to me and to the world if you were to help us for your sponsorship. You get some lovely gifts. That is, if you're the kind of person that is, well, becoming devoted, is devoted, sees the value of what it means to work upon yourself, what it means to awaken spiritually, because that's really what it's all about. Aspire is about spiritual awakening. And I hope that you will, maybe be interested in it if you're the kind of person that is beyond the corporate mentality, the pedestrian mentality. Anyway, for your gifts, you get the message of the month, access to my podcast, video cast, and very controversial commentaries, as well as all of my TV discourses that I did over the years, 122 of them, I believe there are, on all sorts of subjects. Nobody Likes You Anyway, one of the more popular ones. The Eightfold Path of Buddha, all of the ones I did on the Tao, A Life Worth Living, What is the Point of It All, just to name a few of the many that I've done to serve you. And they're all there to help you understand the way, the truth, and the light that lives within you. And it does live within you. I hope that you will become a sponsor. If you go to the website at aspire.org, you will see at the top support. If you click on that, a drop-down menu will come down, and it says why support Aspire, and will give you some insight as to why it is so important to help us. It really is. There are not many programs / teachers / whatever I am that are around, and it is only through your gifts that these programs can exist and help you. That's just the way it is. It costs money to do all this crazy stuff. Why are there spiritual masters? What is a master? What is it? The disciples referred to Jesus as one. Buddha's disciples referred to Gautama becoming the Buddha, him being a master. I have sat before numerous ones, 4 or 5 of them in my day, 6 of them that I can think of right off the top of my head, and some that I met when I was filming in India, even in the early 90s, and I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, they do exist, and they are very interesting people. Probably not what you think they are, but what they are. I want you to understand they are all different in many, many ways. They each have a human body. They each have a carcass to deal with, health issues to deal with. They have many, many things to deal with. So let's get into the questions, and hopefully I'll be able to serve you. The first question comes from Howard. He did not tell me where he lives. Why did God make a Jesus? I don't understand. And how come he's not around today to help us, Howard? Howard, there are so many jokes about why he wouldn't come here now. I mean, I don't want to get into them, and I'm not going to do them, but some of them are pretty funny because we don't appreciate anything spiritual, nothing, I mean, Howard, there's a very good chance this is only a question of yours based out of some kind of curiosity and not really an earnest question based on the idea of what it means to have a spiritual master in your life or to have one on the earth or whatever it's about. Spiritual masters, are real ones, are kind of hidden away now. They're a very small lot. I don't know of any that I have heard of in the West that are functioning and doing their thing. I don't see it. I hear a lot of names being thrown around, none of which after I see them on their YouTube thing, do I realize or think that they are the kind of masters I have been with in the 70s. So I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not a judge of that, and I don't care. What I do care about is your question. God did not make Jesus a spiritual master. He did not make him, mold him, and, you know, as religion would tell you, send him down to this hellhole called Earth for the sake of saving our pitiful souls, as people would say. None of that is true. This is just, you know, what the pedestrian mentality can grasp. It's as far as the pedestrian can go, and that isn't very far. The mentality of the average person isn't very deep, and it doesn't run very deep. So there's lots of nuttiness out there. So people will tell you things that you can understand. They tell you stories that you like to understand, and it makes quote-unquote sense to you. And when people think that something makes sense to them, 9 times out of 10 or 10 times out of 10, the real truth of the matter, the gravitas of the whole situation of what we're talking about, just goes down the toilet. Just down the toilet. There's a lot of people out there who only live for today, only who believe they only live once. And because they live in this manner, it gives them an alibi to do whatever they want, believe whatever they want, and not pay the consequences, because people, especially in the West, do not want to have consequences. So when you look at a Jesus and why he was here, you would have to delve deeply into the Eastern mind. You'd have to delve deeply into your heart, your real heart, not your human heart. You'd have to go into consciousness, not the conscience that most people live in. You'd have to go beyond the belief that there is right and wrong and good and bad, and that this God that you believe created Jesus or was whatever the father of this man was what you've been told he was. You'd have to go deeper, further, and more into the truth of it all. And most people aren't going to do that. They're just not interested in that. They want their Western lifestyle with a little bit of an Eastern flair. And that's it. To really get into it is very, very difficult for the average person. I used to get up every Sunday morning for some 25 years, and I would prepare during the week a discourse for the crowd, the people. And they would come, and they would never really be interested in anything other than, how can this guy, Greg Penn, make my life better? How can he get me what I want and show me how to get what I want? That's as far as it went, whether it was healing in the body or money in the bank. And basically, it was one of those two things. They wanted their kids, to survive. That's about as far as it went there. They never really matured into anything else. And I would stand there Sunday after Sunday in the beginning of my career, kind of shielding and hiding my experience in India, trying to, give a little here, a little there, leak it out here a little bit, leak it out there a little bit, and see how it floated. But basically, people are dummied down by the idea of what they want. We are never, all of us, me included, are never more stupid than when we're trying to get something we want and we do it through emotionality. It just doesn't work. So you have to come to a place, as I did, where you decide what the rest of your life is going to be all about. What are you going to do with the rest of your life? As you get older, and I don't know how old you are, Howard, but as you get older, your mind deteriorates very rapidly into emotionality, into your genetic nature. You are no longer much interested in anything other than the routine you have built in your life and how to stay in it for as long as you possibly can before your body dies. And that's the way most people live. I can't change that in people. I can't challenge it. I used to talk about it a great deal when I was teaching formally and standing there. And basically, I got a lot of looky-loos who would come. But I had to make a decision to understand what the nature of my work was. Jesus, Buddha, Lao Tzu, they are the nature of spiritual awakening. They were very interesting men. I read them every day of my life, one way or another. I'm always reading something that pertains to all of this, and it is amazing to me. I am not surprised they crucified Jesus. I am not surprised they killed Socrates. I am not surprised that anyone in this world who was teaching anything higher than that of mere emotional survival is not dead. I truly understand, because we don't like that. That's not something we care for as a society. It's not in our culture to spiritually awaken. Where it is in India is it's a part of their culture, or it used to be. I don't know what it is now. I haven't been there for 100 years now, and I don't know what it is. But when I was living in India and working on myself from that point of view, I was very smitten by the idea that spiritual awakening was a way of life. That's why I do retreats. In these retreats, you have a chance to live in the confines of 4 or 5 days of a spirituality in a very sweet place and working upon yourself. And that's one of the great values. But people find the separation of pulling themselves out of their mundane life, their routine life, very difficult, because their mind is always based in the emotionality of survival, survival. God did not make a Jesus, Howard. Not like you're alluding to here. Jesus was a result of many incarnations. Jesus was the result of a texture of consciousness. He had a soul. And that soul permeated everything he did. And it went before him in everything he did. And he was unusual, as was the Buddha, as was Lao Tzu, as was the masters that I was privileged enough to sit with. And you don't go and find them. You are drawn to them. And I did some discourses on what it means to have a spiritual teacher in your life. In May, I did that. I explained to my students through the discourses what it meant to have a spiritual teacher in your life, someone who could give you the other shore. Didn't make a dent in them. They are so evaporated in the impossible inside of themselves. They're living in the means of the end, which is to survive, and they're looking for anything that will help them survive the difficulties of the world and the difficulties of themselves, and they miss. So, Howard, Jesus is the result of a great love that he found within himself, and he so lovingly and generously shared with us, and he remains one of the greatest teachers I have ever read in my life. And there have been plenty that I have read, and he is one of the most beautiful. I have great respect for him. Please forgive me. Namaste. Here's one from Carol. Carol lives in L.A., and she often writes, and I'm grateful. Who was Jesus and Buddha really, Carol? Who was Jesus? Well, when you talk about Jesus, are you talking about the man? When you're talking about Buddha, are you talking about Siddhartha? I don't know who you're talking about. But if you're talking about their spirituality, it's totally different. Let me just say this. Jesus was a man. Buddha, as Siddhartha, was a man. Now, what they incarnated in through this lifetime, what they transformed into, was totally different than the men they were. They used their humanity as a means for the ends of their spiritual awakening. They did not live as a human being within themselves. They had to eat, they had to drink, they had to poop, they had to pee, they had to walk, they had to do everything a human being does. They did. But that doesn't make them just a man. They were more than that. There was something within them that ignited their lives into the universe. And that something was love. And that love is the soul of each of us. But we don't have souls until we recognize the state of love that lives within us. Until we are willing to put down our pride, our vanity, our ego, our stories, the beliefs we have, until we are ready to drop them all, we have nothing. We have absolutely nothing. All we have is a mind and a body, an intellect, and that's as far as it ever goes. We don't go into love. We don't go into the nurturing of love, real love, authentic love, because we miss. We make our life very difficult because we put these two men, let's just take these two, Jesus and Buddha, and we make them gods. We make them better than. And the me generation, the me too, the me first generation, the Gen Xers, the millennials, they don't get it at all. Their parents didn't show them any part of what it meant to be spiritual at all. So they didn't get this. And so they look at this stuff, they go, oh, I hate religion. And I understand. I mean, you look at the Catholic Church, you gotta wonder about the sanity of the people that go there. I consider Catholics, people who go there, crazy. I do. I mean, after all that they've done, after all that has been proven, after everything, they still go on the way they do in fear of. You can get people to worship, to believe in anything, government, religion, anything based on fear. So the millennials and the Gen Xers and the Me Too or the Me generation, they all look at all of this stuff and they go, this is ridiculous. And while I agree with them, it is ridiculous. They don't seek anything deeper. They don't go any further. They just hover around this whole thing of what it means to just survive and live for today, and there are no consequences. You only live once. That's what they believe. And in this only live once as an alibi, it gives them, in their minds, the right to do anything they want to do whenever they want to do it. And that's the way they are. Now, when you start asking questions like, who is this Buddha guy? Who is this Jesus who became what is known of as the Christ? These are unusual human beings. Remember how Buddha did it. He saw old age and sickness and death, and he wanted to overcome all three. He did not know of any of this when he was younger. Who of among us does? When you're young, you think you'll never die. When you're young, you think this is going to all last forever. Why worry about it? Well, it doesn't. It really doesn't. I have students who really struggle with the idea that they're getting old. They really do struggle. They have a really hard time with it all. And as they do get older and they see the wrinkle and the pain and, you know, you got to negotiate the idea when you drop something, is it worth the effort to pick it up based on the pain that you might be having to pick it up? So you look at how you live your life and the way you live your life, and your body determines that biology and determines your pain, and you determine whether or not you're going to do whatever you're going to do based on avoiding pain. And of course, that's where we miss. Jesus, Buddha, they are not like us at all in any of this. Yes, they have their pains and everything, just like you and I did. Don't think crucifixion felt comfortable. Don't think that dying, Buddha talked about his body at the end, that it was like a rickety old cart that was walking around, held together basically with wire. He knew. He was very explicit about all of this, even in the Dhammapada. So, who are they? Who were these two guys? Who was Jesus? Who was Buddha? They were something that lives within us all. They are a quality of consciousness. They are the expression of a profound love, a love that goes beyond our pettiness and our pride. They are inexplicable. And that's why it's so important to teach them and to sustain their work in this world, because they were the way, the truth, and the light. I gotta go. Carol, please, thank you. Namaste. Gotta go. Why do you combine Buddha and Jesus in your teachings? Jesse from Las Vegas. Why? I don't think of Jesus had his teachings and Buddha had his I never thought like that. I got smeared by my colleagues and smeared by the movement when I brought in the Jesus thing, and all sorts of people got very angry at me. Only talk Jesus. But my work was not to be a Buddhist. My work was not to be a Christian. My work was to reveal the truth that would set you free. Sometimes I would use Jesus because his teachings were so monumentally accurate. Sometimes I would add the Buddha in there because his teachings were monumentally beautiful and accurate. I'm not an either or person. I'm an everything person. And you just don't sit there and ignore the Buddha when you are teaching something that is crucial to a person's awakening, their spiritual awakening. And you don't delete Jesus when you're doing the same thing, because he had magnificent things to say. To be close-minded, to be so, I'm either a thissa or a thatta. I'm either a Buddhist or I'm a Christian or I'm a wawa or a wawa. You don't do that. Not when you're trying to really help people. You combine, help people understand the harmony, the music, the beauty of what it is to awaken spiritually, to go beyond the falderal of belief and ideals and religious lines that are set in the sand. You can't cross that line, because if you do, then you're a that. This is just too petty for me, and I couldn't stand it. So the reason I combine them is because they're so beautiful. And when you combine them and you show the relative insight of both these men and Krishna as well, Lhasa as well, you start to realize you're immersed in a world, in a lifetime of great beauty, of great insight, of great love, of great potential. And why limit it just to what other people say is the doctrine? I got to get out of here. Thank you, Jesse. I hope that helped you, and please forgive me. I hope this program was helpful to you. Have a beautiful day, and I'll be back on the air tomorrow. Please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.